Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Santiago Varela of Kardashev Bitcoin. We're talking about mining Bitcoin in Mexico today. Really interesting international conversation just south of the border. Talk with him about the general outlook on Bitcoin in Mexico, how it works with energy grids in Mexico, and then lastly, importing goods such as ASICs and containers. Thank you, Santiago, for making this show possible. I'd also like to thank Forman Mining for making this episode possible. You'll hear from Forman a little bit later in today's episode. Want to mine Bitcoin? Gator Mining offers premium hosting with as low as one unit per client, 95% uptime guaranteed, no curtailment, 24/7 monitoring and maintenance, in-house certified repair center, clean and renewable energy, all at competitive market rates. Work with an individualized team to get hash rate flowing your way today. Gator Mining, pioneering trustworthy crypto hosting for optimal mining success. Contact Gator Mining today at gatormining.ca. Bitcoin miners, be prepared. Hash rate is moving upstream towards power plants and low-value energy. Don't get cut off. Modernize and mobilize your Bitcoin mining fleet today with Upstream Data's high-performance load centers. Plug in Upstream Data's hash hut and monetize surplus wind power reliably in the blistering heat of West Texas. Plumb in hash generators and safely convert natural gas into cash in the frigid winters of northern Canada. Upstream offers high-quality load centers that will help you mine Bitcoin safely and reliably in every application and climate. Mobilize today and start mining Upstream at upstreamdata.com. Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Santiago Varela. Welcome to the show. Talking about Kardashev Bitcoin. Really excited to talk about mining in Mexico.
Hi, Will. Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I've listened to your show multiple times, so it's nice to be here. And yeah, I think that what we're going to talk about today is going to be very interesting.
Definitely. So let's get a profile on yourself, first of all. I met you down at the Nashville Mining Conference. I was gracious to meet another miner in person. Caught my attention because you're mining internationally. I try to have as many international shows as possible. We've had people from China, obviously. We've had people in Kazakhstan. We had people down in Venezuela mining. I think we even had someone in Tierra del Fuego down the tip of Chile, Argentina, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I don't think we've had anyone from Mexico on the show yet to talk about Bitcoin mining. As a sidebar, if you are an international miner and you're interested in talking with me, give me an email. That would be great. I know there's a few people out there who have not reached out yet, so do so. But yeah, let's go to the bio first. Tell me a little about yourself.
Of course, I'm from Mexico. I was born and raised in Mexico City. I'm still in Mexico City. Right now, we're talking in here, my little Bitcoin lab in Mexico City, where I do some guerrilla mining or home mining. Exactly Denver Bitcoin Adam from Upstream likes to call it. So I'm actually right behind me. I had to turn off my A6. This is where it all started. Well, I began doing this at another garage in another basement, but now I'm doing it here. And that's how it all began, literally, just learning by myself. I have an experience in economics, finance, business management, but I was really attracted by this part of Bitcoin, not just by the traditional trading part or investment part or portfolio management, whatever it is. I was attracted by the industry market. I thought that was very, very interesting. So I began to get into that. I saw that some guy on Twitter posted about a Bitcoin mining meetup in Mexico City. And I was like, wow, I don't know any other miners in person. There's something going on in Mexico City. Went over there. Met two guys. Eventually, those two guys and I got together. I joined them on a project that they had begun working on. And that's what Kardashev BTC has turned into. It's a Mexican Bitcoin mining company that is focused on harnessing all of the stranded energy in Mexico. And Mexico is a very, very particular energy market. I think that it will be very interesting for all of your audience to learn a little bit about how this is different, because actually Texas, that is the center of hash, was part of Mexican jurisdiction more than 200 years ago. And the fact that there is very little hash rate in Mexican territory compared to Texas tells you a lot about the difference in jurisdictions. It doesn't mean that we have worse or less natural resources. It all has to do with regulations and the bureaucracy built around the energy sector that have changed the incentives and doesn't allow this to happen. So there's a lot to talk about in that regard.
That's a interesting point about Texas and Mexico. I'd actually not thought of just the fact that one's a little more free market capitalist. Obviously there's a history in Mexico of nationalizing certain industries, especially energy, which we're going to get into later in the show. That has implications for how businesses can develop. And for Bitcoin, which is, hyper capitalistic, it's always going to go where there's cheap energy and you're going to see entrepreneurs pop up and try to take advantage of the Bitcoin network's issuance of money. You're going to see differences in how jurisdictions play out, how miners go to different jurisdictions. Let's talk a little bit about the profile for Kardashev Bitcoin and how you guys see yourselves as a Bitcoin miner. Let's talk about energy, the profile there, where you guys deploy Bitcoin, how you guys are thinking about growing over the next year, those sort of things.
Okay, yeah. Well, so Kardashev is a very particular mining company. I would say that a lot of our inspiration, and I have actually told already these guys Drew Armstrong and Marty Bent and people like that, when we read their shareholders letter, what me and the other co-founders had in common is that we had read this letter and we shared this common vision of an abundant future in energy and so on. So that's where we began. And since Mexico is very complicated in the energy market and actually, for example, to do power purchase agreements like traditional PPAs, over 500 kilowatts is practically illegal. You have to get a very special permit that is very, very hard to get, almost impossible. And what we did is that instead of doing a PPA, we said, well, as Kardashev BTC, let's begin doing gas purchase agreements, GPA. So the gas purchase agreements that we were doing were focused on biogas. So this biogas was coming from landfills, sanitary landfills, and also from pig farms with their poop. You can imagine that you have a farm with 40,000 pigs. You can power a couple of maybe 2 or 3 megawatts of ASICs there. So that's where we thought that was the big opportunity. And then also in the way, we have began searching into oil and gas opportunities. However, yes, biogas is our main focus. And what we are specifically targeting, there are some very big opportunities that we have spotted that we haven't yet tapped into. And we are very attracted by that because also of that part of doing the circular economies, then maybe using the waste heat to do something else, the methane reduction and getting a revenue from the carbon credits. And actually, Kardashev BTC was part of, you have probably heard of him, or I don't know if you have even had him in your podcast, of Daniel Batten's CH4 Capital. It was a landfill gas Bitcoin mining accelerator program. It was a couple months program. And he chose 8 companies, and Kardashev BTC was one of them. So we participated in that, and we have been very active in that regard. But Mexico has a lot of potential, and obviously, in the long term, we have other plans and a vision to tap into the bigger energy sources that our territory has. We would like to take this to Latin America. And we also have this vision of eventually doing something related to demand responses or something like that. But today in Mexico, that is illegal because of the regulations. So there's a lot that we want to do, but we have decided what things to do in the short term and what things to do in the long term when we also demonstrate to regulators by example that this technology is actually good for not only the energy sector, but the welfare and the well-being of the population and of the people of Mexico and Latin America.
Definitely. I want to go through all those different energy lines really quickly. So biogas, probably the most interesting one. I think we've had one biogas miner on the show before. I'm not quite certain. It's probably been about 2 years since that. Walk me through a little bit what that looks like from an energy and a mining perspective. Like, who are you guys working with? How do you get in contact with these vendors? Are these people who, you know, have the places where there's natural places to like create biogas? Are they really welcoming of miners? Do governments even like this? Are they willing to like give you guys the ability to come in and use that?
Okay, yeah, that's a very good question. And with this answer, I think that I will illustrate why biogas was very strategic for Kardashev to begin our mining journey in Mexico. So first of all, sanitary landfills, well, they manage waste. You know, they do waste management services. They take the trash from Ala City and they take it to a park. Normally, they are located in the outskirts of a city. They are never like in downtown. You know, they are outside because they need like a big space and they also smell really bad. So they're practically isolated. So they don't normally execute these. They call them waste to energy projects. We just see waste as something that is dragging us behind, but actually waste is a resource. You know, if we can handle it and harness that energy and the waste in the correct manner. And if you do that, then you can monetize that and give it economic value. So they never do these waste to energy projects, first of all, because they are very far from energy consumers. They would have to do an investment in transmission lines. And then the other barrier to entry here is the regulation. Since it's almost impossible to get a permit to connect to the grid, well, why are they going to do the investment? If they do the investment, they won't be allowed to sell it to anyone. So why do it? So it's practically impossible. They're with their hands tied. And when you come with a solution like ours and you tell them, well, we're going to bring the consumption to site, all of these projects, of course, they are all completely off grid. It's bringing the consumer, bringing the molecule to the market. The other way around, bringing the market to the molecule instead of the molecule going to the market, which is a traditional way in which it works. So when they hear about that opportunity, they are very attracted and they say like, oh, well, this thing that I am not taking advantage of, well, let's monetize it. And normally how it works is that the sanitary landfills, they are the property is owned by the government, the local government, whatever it is. And they give it to a private company to do the waste management services. So you do the business with the private company in that case. And for them, they just get an extra revenue or something depending on, obviously, the risk reward that they want to take and so on.
Gotcha. Now, pivoting out of that energy line from biogas to these other ones seems like a pretty big jump. Maybe it's not from a mining perspective, right? You're still just plugging in a box and making sure the electrical outlets work out pretty well. But you know, going from biogas still to nat gas or mining off-grid, those sort of things seems pretty difficult. How are you guys thinking about scaling that part of your business?
Well, right now we are still focused in small projects because of the laws that are that really put limits when anything gets above 500 kilowatts. So we are focusing on many projects, but smaller projects. And then eventually we do want to apply for a special license to do bigger projects because we have spotted opportunities where you could tap into 10 plus megawatts. So there is a lot of potential, but it also depends a lot on the regulation. And then in terms of scaling, well, it also all depends a lot on, you know, business relations and connections, doing joint ventures with companies in the United States, in Canada, or elsewhere, and bringing the best technology and the best business partners in all senses, you know, to Mexico, because there are a lot of people that are energy asset owners in the country and that could be benefited from this, not only the biogas or the waste management service companies, but also oil and gas companies. Although we do have Pemex, which is a state-owned monopoly for oil production and exploitation, there is some private companies that handle like 10% of Pemex's business. So there is some private companies that you could find entrance with there. Also, the solar and the wind industry is pretty big. There has been a lot of investment in that in some areas of the country. I know of some people that have been actually looking into those opportunities, and some people have been also doing mining actually and with hydro in some parts of Mexico.
Gotcha. Okay, let's jump into the meat of it, which is you guys are mining in Mexico. We don't have a lot of people on the show who talk about that, or I don't know a lot of Bitcoin miners who are doing it. So tell me a little bit about the Bitcoin mining scene down in Mexico. Like, how many people are out there? How many megawatts do you think are deployed? Or like, I don't know, hash rate, how much is deployed out there? Seems like it's pretty sparse, especially compared to something like Texas, which you led with at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, no, the mining scene in Mexico is very quiet. The few miners that I know there are people like myself that are mining at home or something like that. Very, very few people. And I know that there are some private miners out there that haven't actually disclosed information about their capacity, their sites, where they're at, what machines they have, or so on. But yeah, I know some people that have been in some Bitcoin mining farms around the country and in weird places and so on. But it's mostly, there's not a lot of noise regarding Bitcoin mining. And specifically, like, it's nowhere near Texas, you know, which is what we began the show with. Regarding hash rate or metrics like that, it's practically like non-existent if you want to compare it to that. And a lot of it has to do with the regulations. I was listening actually to Adams Ortlolf from Upstream podcast with Natalie Brunel from a couple days ago, and he mentioned that I think the United States is the only country in which the minerals from the land from your property is actually yours. So that really changes the incentive for all of the agents in this game, we could say. And that's something that has really, I think that is the defining factor that has caused this to be that way.
Walk that out a little bit more for me. So from my understanding, in Mexico, you know, the minerals under your feet, the molecules, like, are not necessarily yours. They belong to the government, and specifically like the energy, the oil or nat gas, coal under the ground belongs to the national government. It does not belong to you, the individual who owns the right set of land.
Exactly. Exactly. So imagine that you lived in the state, or you had a big ranch in the state of Chihuahua, which is a state in the northern part of Mexico with a border with Texas. You had a ranch there. And one day, I don't know, someone or you just find that you have oil underneath your property. You wouldn't be able to exploit that, to get that oil to sell it yourself. Actually, what would happen is that the government would come in and they would take that land from you. They would probably give you some money, not what it's worth, but they would just like give you some money and or another property. And they would convert it into one of their wells for Pemex. So that's how it works with all of the natural resources in Mexico. Practically, the natural resource, it says in the Constitution that it belongs to the nation. It's part of the Mexicans. It's not anyone in particular. It's the Mexicans. And this was also done a lot. These laws, their historical context, come a lot from, you know, being afraid from imperialism or stuff like that, you know, not wanting people from outside to come and buy the lands with all of the natural resources and then leave the other people without money. But, you know, they thought maybe back in the day that was like an ideal thing, and they didn't really study economics. And now today we see that that was wrong, you know, and that's actually now not how things should be done, because it messes up the incentives, you know, and a very small change in the incentives can have a very big impact.
Hey, listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Foreman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Foreman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Foreman, you get a system that scales with your business: inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Foreman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Foreman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit foreman.mn. With Foreman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about some of those constraints you guys are facing with. When we were talking earlier, like I think a week or so ago, you mentioned that because of this provision that you don't own the energy resources under your feet and they belong to the national government or the people, you basically can't do off-grid Bitcoin mining. Like, you have to interact with the grid, right? Like, there's not a very clear way to do gridless mining.
No, actually, because of all of how the structure works with the energy market and the latest reforms from the new administration, well, not so new, what is easiest is to do only off-grid projects. They call it island mode. What is almost impossible is to get a permit. They call it an interconnection permit. And that, in other words, what that permit says is that you can sell electricity or use electricity for yourself, for your own fabric or whatever you have, or your Bitcoin mine, but then also sell a fraction of that to the grid and maybe do demand response or something like along those lines. But that is practically impossible to get. I think that there have been only four of those, and obviously some of them were given to state-owned companies, and other of them were given to massive companies, billion-dollar companies. So it's very difficult to get into that part. And I would say that the best thing about off-grid is precisely that you also help these people that are like in very remote places to break barriers, you know, that they had before. Because for them, it's also very hard to work with CFE. CFE is a state-owned company. It stands for Federal Commission of Electricity. And it's a pain to work with them. And they give you your bills every 2 months and so on. And the bureaucratic process is very complicated. So when you have something that easy and you have the technology that, instead of getting your bills every 2 months and working with someone that is very complicated, you can check it in your smartphone every 24 hours to see how much energy you're giving, or how much biogas, and how much either Bitcoin or how many dollars are coming into your wallet every 24 hours. Like, everything changes. So it's like it's not only like an energy efficiency service, it's just like a complete, like, all around efficiency, like holistic efficiency and making the world better in so many ways. You know, like, also this is like transparency in that sense, because on the other part, people get their electricity bill and they never understand like what they get. They just say it and they just like pay, like, oh, okay, I just have to pay my electricity bill. They don't even know. And if they have solar panels, it's very hard to know, like, oh, I had this, I consumed this, and then I had this extra, whatever. And, you know, so this is like a big breakthrough, a big innovation in that regard. And that's why we also call it that it's like a Trojan horse for the Mexican energy market.
So I had that perfectly backwards. It is, okay, an easier to do gridless stuff than on grid. Tell me about the interconnection stuff a little bit, because that's interesting. What is it like, and what kind of bureaucratic functions do you have to go through to be able to get something like that? Is it even like possible? It's just like off the table completely. It's so foreign to the Mexican government or whatever agency you'd work with.
Well, it is possible if you're a big company, like, for example, and all of this information is public. You can find it on the web. But I think that the private company that has one of these concessions or for interconnection is, for example, Iberdrola. They're a company from Spain. They have many millions of dollars of investments in Mexico. They're an infrastructure company, and they do highways. They do all kinds of energy projects. So they have one of those, and it's harder, practically impossible, to get one of these. I have talked to several different lawyers that are focused on the energy markets in Mexico that have worked for the Commission of Regulations for Energy Markets in Mexico, and so on. And many of them have told me that obviously you can apply and you can send your format. They're going to tell you it's hard, but in other words, it's practically like impossible. Maybe you'll never even like get a reply, or you'll just like, they'll just like keep you waiting or so on. And then with the changes of administrations and so on, you depend a lot of political cycles and so on. So it's not the way, and it's really, it makes you like swim against the current, you know, that kind of thing. So you have to look for another business model in which you are, let's say, agnostic to politics, you know, and where politics doesn't really interfere with what you are doing. And I think that that is not only the reality in Mexico. Obviously, in the United States, there is also a lot of controversy around politics and so on. But I think that maybe Mexico, Latin America, the political problems that we have are greater and are very similar, also because of, you know, just of being colonized by the Spanish and having all of that heritage in our culture and so on. There's something very similar in the way that the laws are structured and how the state really is like authoritarian in some senses, and the democracies don't work correctly. So it has to do a lot of with that, you know, and with state of law, especially, you know. Maybe United States has many problems, but state of law is one of the strengths in the United States, because people actually like, do respect the laws, and like very, very small laws. And that doesn't happen maybe in Mexico or in other Latin American countries. And in the end, that translates also into violence and insecurity, which also has been, at least not in our case, a problem for mining. But I do know that a lot of people in the United States, in Canada or so on that I have talked to, there is a concern, you know, on the people when they say, well, what if I send my ASICs over there, and or my container or my generator? What's going to happen once it passes the border, you know? If they drive it there, are they going to steal it? Or when we leave it there, who's going to do the surveillance or whatever? You know, like many things that go around there. And of course, they preoccupy the people. But I think that the worst thing is that they really even impede business sometimes in Mexico. And hopefully something like in Salvador could happen, you know, that they reduce the insecurity so drastically in a matter of a couple of years. But obviously in a big country as Mexico, that is way, way harder.
This is really interesting. So on the security, or actually I want to go back to the way the government or way others are viewing Bitcoin mining in the US and probably globally to an extent. There's like the green thing, right? Where it's like, we don't want Bitcoin mining because it's taking energy away from like mom and dad trying to get to the hospital. But in Mexico, is it viewed differently because the energy grid is more or less nationalized? Like, do people look at Bitcoin mining as like parasitic at all? Or is it even like on the radar? Because you said like there's not much Bitcoin mining there.
Well, my first thought would be that people are not even aware of it. And the very minority of people that are aware of it, maybe they are aware of it because there has been some articles in the mainstream media that have said about how the energy consumption is just bad or is dirty or whatever they want to say. But at the end, I do feel that people, when they just like give it a little bit time and try to understand how it can actually be good. Like they understand it's good. So it's not something political. I just think it's something that many people are not aware of it. They don't even have a stance of it, if it's good or bad. But there is one very good anecdote, though. I was presenting in a class for college a Bitcoin mining project in a sanitary landfill. And there was an audience, like the teacher. She brought the audience for this presentation. And I just grabbed a presentation that I already had from Cardish with BTC, which made it easier. And I didn't have to like spend double time on that presentation for the class. And it worked out perfectly. But someone in the audience, when the questions came at the end, he told me, "Don't you think you're doing something diabolical, something satanic?" And I told him, "Why?" And he told me, "Well, look, there is one bad, which is the trash and all of the pollution, and then another bad."
No way.
Just putting them together and doing a great bad together, you know, like... And I was like, "No, that's not how it works."
How did that conversation end? Did you like convince him or even get anywhere with him?
Yeah, I kind of tried to convince him and so on, but I wasn't too worried also because he was just like someone in the audience. He wasn't the teacher or the person grading me. So I got a decent grade or something, a good grade. So I wasn't too worried about that. And I handled the question.
That's interesting. People think of it that way still. But in terms of like relevance to like the nominal Mexican citizen, I suppose, just like hasn't really hit the way that we're seeing in Texas, where, you know, there's some decent motion around it because of all the energy outages they've had over the years. Let's go to the more boring infrastructure talk, which I think is sort of useful for people out there who are maybe looking at mining in different jurisdictions. And I'm thinking like for a tariff to bring in a container or ASICs, what does that look like? Are you purchasing things in Mexico itself versus importing? How do you go about hiring people for labor, for construction? Is there enough engineers and things like that to kind of build your company within Mexico? Or are you bringing people in like we saw post-China ban where a lot of Chinese Bitcoin miners were coming to the US? A lot of questions I just threw at you, but I'll just kind of let you ramble through those few different things on the like the business side.
Okay, yeah, that's a very good question. So first of all, I think that tariffs and so on, let's tackle that first. On that side, I think that it's one of the things that really worries people a lot. And obviously, it's just a little bit more expensive, but it's not a big issue. People sometimes are very worried that your container or your ASICs or whatever won't even make it through the border, that they will confiscate it there. But that is not too hard. That's not the case. Like Mexico obviously has very, very big industries and bigger things come across the border all the time from the United States, from Canada, from other places to the ports. So that is not like a big issue. Maybe what is an issue is just that it takes a little bit more time and that just consumes a little bit more of weeks or whatever it be. And well, price-wise, let's say that it would be the same. Sometimes people in Mexico, one thing that they do if they want to order a bunch of things from Amazon and they're going to the United States soon, they do their order to their hotel in the United States or to their apartment or whatever instead of doing it to Mexico with Amazon. And it's just because obviously it's more expensive to do the shipping to Mexico, you know, and it works the same way with Amazon with containers and with ASICs, you know, like maybe it's just, they're just going to charge you a little bit more, but it's going to get there. And maybe it's also going to take a little bit more of days or weeks or whatever. But the other interesting thing that I wanted to touch on this point is the mechanics that you were precisely mentioning. And there is a case that we're working on right now in these weeks. And it's actually in a place where, well, we haven't even gone there yet, but we don't know too well what's going to be like all of the conditions where the miners are going to be and who's going to be the person who's going to be doing the maintenance and so on. So we might need to be bringing someone from outside of town to either train him or be there for some time. So that obviously increases and change your costs and changes the economics of the project. If you don't, also if this guy that they don't train him well, or he doesn't learn well and he can't do it well, and the container ends up messed up, then your ASICs are off and all of the project is practically in shambles. So I think that, and that is also one of the most important things, you know, like maybe you can have all of the pieces of a project in place, but if you don't have the mechanic at the end, that is like a little dumb and silly thing that you might not think of before you buy all of the other stuff, then it won't turn out correctly. So, and it's not easy to find someone that can do this in every place. For example, this place, I don't even know anyone that's into Bitcoin. So, or maybe an electrical engineer, someone that can do maintenance of the ASICs also, not only the generator. So I think that those are some of the barriers that still exist, and they will still exist for some time until we can do something different, like maybe do manufacturing also in Mexico for some parts of Bitcoin, or in some part in Texas also, where if they would have manufacturing closer, and it would just like be right across the border whenever you have ASICs for repair or something like that. But yeah, in that sense, still it's similar to the rest of the industry, that, you know, in that regard, people are still like hassling and seeing what they can do, unless that they are very big and they can already do it for by themselves. They're completely vertically integrated.
On the container side, do you see a lot of the American made containers making their way down to Mexico, or people typically just build them in Mexico?
Yeah, actually we have seen that possibility of building containers ourselves. We have considered it. But for now, the best thing is to bring containers either from US or from Canada, and or elsewhere. That has definitely been the best. But I do know some people doing containers also, and they look pretty good already in some parts of South America, like Paraguay or so mm-hmm. on. Like this one was really interesting because it was like a company that did containers for something else, but they began to see that there was a demand for miners. So they are like, oh, let's just do a slight change to this and so on. And they released like a model for miners or in some part of South America. So, but yeah, in Mexico, that hasn't happened yet. I imagine that maybe in some years when really the energy markets start to use this tool much more. I think that right now they're just either scared or not even aware of it, but in some years it will just become the norm in the industry. I was talking with some people that are very into the industry a couple of weeks ago, and they were telling me, you know, like, yeah, we feel like this is like we're being pioneers, but in some years it will just be, you know, like the norm, like every company that does what we do will be also be doing this. So, and they're just about to, they haven't even started. They just want to try it out. So, yeah, like it, for not only for biogas, but for oil and gas, for solar, as I was saying, for all of the energy industry, it's very, it's a big breakthrough.
In terms of capital markets in Mexico, what does that look like for Bitcoin mining or even Bitcoin? I'm just kind of thinking here, we just passed 50K Bitcoin today as recording this. Seems like enthusiasm is coming back. Is there a lot of capital markets in Mexico that would be interested in, you know, helping a Bitcoin mining company like Kardashev out or other Bitcoin mining companies out?
Well, look, this makes me think about the point that I didn't talk about before when you asked me a little bit about the hassles of doing business and doing mining in Mexico. One other thing is just to register a business in Mexico, it can take up to 6 months. But in the United States, you can do that in 48 hours. So that really, like, that's where a lot of the gap in innovation comes from. You know that all of that process is so bureaucratic, so difficult. It disincentives people. People just prefer to go and work in the informal economy or just not do entrepreneuring at all. So what brings me to think about, can you remind me the question right now? I kind of got lost in all of that.
No, you're good. Tell me a little bit about like capital markets in Mexico going into like 50K Bitcoin or higher.
Okay. Yeah. So regarding capital markets, I was talking about how that is different in Mexico because I wanted to mention this other fact that in Mexico for capital markets, I researched it a couple of months ago. And for in the United States, I believe that like 49 or 50% of the population or the adult population participates in the capital markets or has invested in some way. And in Mexico, that same number is 1%. So obviously we have our stock exchange and so on, but it is not as big as that. And they have been very bullish lately on ESG and so stuff. So on that regard, we might have an opportunity, but not really focused on that regard. I really don't see a public miner in Mexico anytime soon in the Mexican stock exchange. Maybe in some years, but not anytime soon. I think that more of the... Actually, what I do believe will happen is that public miners from the United States will eventually do some projects in Mexico in some good opportunities that they spot.
Yeah, I'd be all about that. That'd be a pretty cool video. Go down there and kind of shoot on a... I don't know, what would it be, like a Mexican ranch or something, mining Bitcoin out there.
Yeah.
As we're closing out.
Yeah, oh, go ahead. Let's do one soon.
Oh, I mean, it would be dope. So let me know if there's a biogas site or something, I'll be down there. As we're kind of closing out here, any final thoughts on like Mexican mining market, Bitcoin market, as we're going to 50K, general outlook, kind of leave it to you for last thoughts in the conversation.
Yeah, well, right now I would just say that, I'm excited, but I'm also a little bit concerned because of so many people hopping on. You know, I am in my group of friends. I am that guy that they look at and they say, you know, like he's the weird, crazy Bitcoin guy. And right now that it's pumping, they all text me and stuff. So I actually wrote an article about that. Like, so all of you guys that are asking me and stuff, just read this and, you know, like go do your research and stuff. But I'm also worried because when there's like so much mainstream and so much speculation, there's a lot of people coming into the network who haven't really or don't even want to understand the network. They want to understand Bitcoin only with lowercase, which is the asset, and they don't want to understand Bitcoin, the network. And that's what I'm all about, you know, like today is February 14th, Valentine's Day, and here I am with you, you know, talking about Bitcoin mining. Obviously,
it's not at night though, so you can't throw us that hard under the bus.
It's lunchtime.
Yeah, it's lunchtime. It's a work day.
Yeah. So obviously, I love Bitcoin mining, but more than Bitcoin mining, just the network in general. You know, like I'm very passionate and very bullish, not only on what it can do for energy markets, but what it can do for financial inclusion. For wealth construction, for many things, for culture, you know, for people having low time preferences, for how it literally changes people, you know, how that famous Max Kaiser quote of Bitcoin changes you, you know, because it actually does change you, you know, when there is sound money, there's something in your mind that thinks differently. So, yeah, I would just, my goodbye message would just be for anyone, if you're just getting into Bitcoin or if you've been in Bitcoin for a long time, you know, and always embrace Bitcoin, the network, because that's what's worth it, you know. And it's not only mining, there's many much more to love about Bitcoin out there.
Love it, Santiago. Thank you for joining the podcast. We'll talk again with you soon here. Best of luck mining.
Yeah, hope to stay in contact and hope to see you again soon. Take care, Will. Thank you for having me.